Today on episode number 391 of the School of Podcasting's Morning Announcements, which you can find at schoolofpodcasting.com/391. We've got a cool Because of My Podcast story that shows my buddy James as an expert. And George Hrob started his podcast wanting to make his dad and his friend laugh and ended up touring the world. Check it out. Hit it, ladies.
The School of Podcasting with Dave Jackson.
Podcasting since 2005, I am your personal podcast coach, Dave Jackson, thanking you so very much for tuning in. If you're new to the show, this is where we talk about all things podcasting, from planning to promoting to recording, all points in between. I come along, I bring my 20 plus years of technical training. We flatten, as in flatten, the learning curve. And I let you know that you are never alone when it comes to your podcast success. And on today's show, if you are a regular listener, we like to just jump into it. We've got a great Because of My Podcast story, showing again how podcasting helps you be seen as an expert. This is from the hallway at the New Media Expo with my buddy James. Take it away, buddy.
All right, here we are in the quietest place at New Media Expo in a hallway, because there are no quiet places in Vegas, period.
I'd have to agree with that.
And I'm sitting here with James Newman. And tell us about your podcast.
All right.
What's the name of it?
HumanPerformanceTools.com.
All right. There you go. And that would mean it's probably called Human Performance Tools.
That's correct.
There
yeah.
you go. At HumanPerformanceTools.com. Excellent. And you have a lovely Because of My Podcast story.
Yeah. It's really cool. My blog went live in May. And in August, I started the podcast. And in September, I was asked to actually do a poster presentation on leveraging podcasts and blogs at a human performance conference, the Nuclear Industry Conference in Baltimore. So for a poster session, I was there. I had some freebies and giveaways and stuff, but a lot of people came, and I had some Prezis running on my display table, and they came and they checked out the blog and podcasting, and it was great because a lot of the people in this particular realm are not familiar with podcasts. So on my poster presentation, I was able to say, this is how you get podcasts, not just mine.
Right.
But and these are some of the numbers as to how you can leverage podcasts and why you should, because there's so many different possibilities coming forward in the next, a year or two, that you have a lot more audience chance of, more people will hear your message in a podcast, and I love the format. You know, I'm a big fan of listening to podcasts as well. But it was truly an honor to one of the heads of this organization called INPO that was actually putting this conference on. Mm-hmm. Had heard about it, and I got a personal. Is it okay if you do a poster presentation during our conference based on that? And then I'm also hearing the stuff that, you know, we can't weigh in on a lot of the stuff because it's, you know, it's sensitive and they have certain role that they fulfill within the industry. But they all listen to it and they all come to the site, and which is validated through data. So it's really cool. I just love to hear these people who are interested in the content but are a little shy to say anything until they meet me. So I just love that. It's just a lot of fun. And it's just been a really good experience. And I certainly appreciate School of Podcasting for leading me down the right path to get going with that.
Excellent. There you go. So you're getting asked to do presentations at conferences.
Yeah.
Because of your podcast.
And it wasn't, and the great thing was, it wasn't just, hey, can you come and do a presentation on it? It was do a presentation on your podcast and on your blog.
Yeah.
So what does that look like? I mean, it was just really specific, and I love that. And the whole reason why I got into it was because nobody else was in my particular niche.
There you go.
So it was nice to have people actually interested once I did some work.
If you can be the first,
yeah,
it's a huge, I mean, not to be in second or third or 17th isn't bad. But
I got to tell you, it is so cool that if you put in Human Performance Tools in the Google search engine,
oh, yeah,
I'm there on the first page. Love that. Love that. And it's not, you know, unfortunately, it's not because of thousands and thousands of hits on
the Well, the other thing we need to point out, you're on episode number
Six will be coming out here soon.
There you go. So it's not like you've been doing this forever.
No, I'm still...
But because you're first.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of people are paying attention. And I get these emails. Hey, when's your next episode coming out?
That's cool. So
motivating. You know, I'm so excited.
So tell us what your podcast is about.
Well, what I try to do is I interview somebody that has an interesting job, like a casino high-stakes dealer, somebody that works for a pharmaceutical company in safety assessment. I've interviewed an elderly blind woman. I've interviewed a registered nurse who's a visiting nurse. I've also included a hair salon shop owner. In all of them, I've asked these questions: what are the most common errors that you have to prevent every day? And then I relate their answers to what we're doing to prevent those errors in the nuclear world. And the Nuclear Human Performance Error Prevention Programs are fairly mature, because we started error prevention in the 90s, and a lot of other companies are just now becoming aware in the last 3 to 5 years that we need error reduction programs as well. Because of the money involved, certainly the assets, you know, don't want to break anything, and most importantly, the industrial safety side, we don't want anybody getting hurt. So this is something that we need to pay attention to. And the more people that hear that message, the more people are interested in the message of human performance and error reduction.
Very cool.
So the podcast gets me in talking to somebody that has an interesting job, and what do they do to prevent errors? And then we compare that to, well, what are we doing in nuclear? And if you can pull that into your environment, like whether it's a checklist or there's various human performance tools, which is why it's called human performance tools. So that's where that comes from.
Well, the beauty is, you know, we ran into each other here at New Media Expo, and you didn't punch me in the face.
Right.
Because
I couldn't, man. You make me laugh too much. I love your authenticity and your humor in your podcast. So it's certainly motivating to somebody who's still green with it. So
I say that because you were on the podcast review show. Right?
No, you...
Am I getting you confused with somebody?
You are, but I know what you're thinking. When I first, in my first three podcasts I put out, and I sent them to you, and you reviewed them, and you chewed them up. You told me.
Okay.
Oh, my gosh.
But it wasn't on the podcast review.
No, it wasn't. It wasn't in front of everybody. It was
okay, good.
Fortunately, it was a coach in private kind of situation. And
all right.
You told me all the problems I had, and I'm glad you did. I like the advice you gave somebody earlier tonight. You told her, don't get your mother to listen to the show.
Yeah, let somebody who's not named Mom listen
exactly.
to your first podcast.
Or a New Englander. Right? Somebody's going to give you that authentic, sorry, this sucks. You know, and that's kind of what you did, and I needed that. Because, you know, granted, it pulled me back about 3 weeks before I could put the episodes out again, but I needed that. I needed to hear, well, this is not good. And I'm still not good, but at least I'm trying, and I'm cranking out.
You're doing something right.
I'm doing something that people are listening to and they want more of, so I'm not getting thousands of hits, but I am getting dozens.
I'm on episode, whatever, 380-something, and still listen to mine and go, you know, that could have been better.
Right.
That's
always room for improvement.
Exactly. Well, thank you, sir. And again, we can find you at
humanperformancetools.com.
Thank you.
How cool is that? And that is something I do for members of the School of Podcasting. I just helped someone launch their first episode, and I listened to it and went, I don't quite get how this fits in with what you're doing. Please explain. Now, again, keep in mind, that's always an opinion. It's not a fact. And he explained it. I was like, okay, I get it, because it is your show. But sometimes you want that extra opinion. So another thing I have recorded here, this show is a lot about because of my podcast. We had that one. And for a while, I've had people say, you know what you need to do? You need to have George Hrab. Now, Hrab is spelled H-R-A-B. So it's actually George Hrab. Maybe not. And I've known George for years. He's a musician. I'm a musician. I've had him on my musician podcast, and he's had a lot of things happen. So without further ado, now I will say this. This was recorded in George's room, and the heat or whatever was going on in the background. We had, just so you guys know, everything I'm recording from the New Media Expo is recorded with my Roland R-05 and then a set of condenser microphones from Giant Squid Audio that plug into, as in two microphones go into one plug, and that goes into the Roland R-05, which I then say record in stereo. So George is in one channel, I'm in the other. I then come in, I levelate, I guess you could say. I compress his channel up to -6. I know we're getting geeky here. Sounds weird. Up to -6. And I do the same thing for me, so we're both the same volume. I then mix it down to mono, and that's what you get. So you will hear this occasionally in the background. But rather than try to remove it, there are times when you try to remove the sound that then you have those times when, like, let's say I remove the sound on my channel. And then when I talk, I turn that off. So there was the sound in the background when I was talking because you can't remove that. The in and out of the sound coming in sometimes is more annoying than just leaving the sound in. So you'll have the ambiance of the suite at the Rio as I talk to George.
All right, joining us in room 466 of the Rio is the one, the only, don't be fooled by cheap imitations. I always just, you get all embarrassed, but one of the most creative people on the planet. One of the few podcasts I've listened to for 7 years. Others, you know.
Gosh.
Yeah, I mean, it's so from different platforms, so like I've gone from podcast app to Stitcher and this and that, and you'll lose people on the track. It's always like, all right, oh, we've got to get Geo in here. But George Robb, thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you.
For those
we keep meeting like this. We keep meeting in Vegas and it's odd times. I love it.
So tell for those of us that for those of those people that don't know who the heck George Robb is, tell us a little bit about yourself and tell us about your podcast and where we can find it.
Well, first off, thanks for your very kind words. You were very kind on the floor today too. I was very embarrassed, but you were very.
It was
kind.
Fun because you were getting embarrassed,
oh my gosh.
And I was like. So.
No, these lovely people are asking you questions. And they're asking the learned man questions, and you're diverting to my resume, but I appreciate it. The podcast is called The Geologic Podcast, which has no geology whatsoever.
Right.
It is a collection of stories and sketches and recollections and an appreciation of science, an appreciation of critical thinking, an appreciation of Frank Zappa, an appreciation of prog music and what it's like to be a drummer, a working drummer. So there is never a sort of set format. There are bits that kind of plug in and play. There's about 10 to 15 alternating bits, and we have it anywhere from 2 to 5 or 6 per show, and sometimes none if there's a particularly interesting story or event that has happened to me. If my hot water heater has exploded that week, that'll be a 40-minute story. And I've been doing it since 2007. I started under the advice of the phenomenally, speaking of phenomenal talents, Slough from Sessions with Slough and B Sharp Studios, who said, you got to do a podcast. You got to do it. You got to do it. So I started doing that. And also under the tutelage of Derek and Swoopy from Skepticality, the other pioneers, and just sort of saw what they did and took it from there. So, yeah, the show now is in its 7th year, and I can't believe it's as old as it is and that I've been doing one a week since 2007. I just can't fathom. I've never done anything that consistently. Nothing. Listeners.
So the cool thing is you have these modules, you have this, it's weird because it is kind of a wide variety of topics, but yet, after a while, it's just everything is just very geo.
That's the thing,
George.
You know, the show, like, what's the show about? Well, it's about me.
Yeah.
You know, which is sort of, it is undoubtedly egocentric.
Right.
But it is stuff I find interesting. That's what the show is.
Cool. So now, let's take us back.
Yes.
If we can kind of answer the question because of my podcast.
Right.
So, you know, okay. You start a podcast.
Well, the short answer, because of my podcast, I've been to five continents. I've met almost all of my heroes in terms of critical thinking and skepticism.
Mm-hmm.
I've had my album releases be way more successful and just successful. All because of the show. I've met people. I've traveled the world because of the show, because of the program. And it's a bizarre chain of events. Not that bizarre, but it is this interesting chain of events that really plays into the thing that I always tell students, you know, music students, or when I go and do career day at my high school. I always say, and this is a little bit disheartening initially, but ultimately it's fine, your talent and skill will not get you work. Your talent and skill will not get you work, will not get you gigs, will not get you jobs. But your talent and skill will let you keep the work and jobs that you get.
Mm.
That's like something, I think that's across the board, whether you're selling cars or writing songs or whatever you're doing, or a plumber. The way it works is you have to sort of get into circles of people that can offer you some kind of work, whatever that work may be, which then leads to other work and et cetera, because you have whatever skill set you need to do that work. So when I'm invited to come to Atlanta, you know, in the second year of my show, oh, there's this Dragon Con thing, you got to come to the Dragon Con and check it out. You can't be an official guest, but you should just come and hang out and you'll meet some cool people. Okay. Yeah. Maybe you'll get interviewed. I don't know. We'll see. I'll try to get an interview for you, you know, friend of a friend kind of thing. Well, interview is going to happen. I know I got to bring it for that interview. I got to make some kind of an impression. So, you know, the first time I played Brains Body Both in Atlanta, standing on the table, you know, I knew someone's going to take a picture of it.
Right.
If only to, like, what is this moron doing on the table, you know? And you kind of, that made a reputation of, oh, if you want to have a good distraction on your show, have this guy on and he can do 5 minutes of funny songs or whatever. You know, that then leads to meeting a guy who needs little interstitial moments at a skeptic convention in Las Vegas. Would I be interested in doing that? Oh, the JREF, the James Randi Educational Foundation, wants me to, you know, do 10-minute songs between speakers? Yeah, great. I'll do it. Fantastic.
And if I understand that, for podcasters, I mean, the New Media Expo is the...
Sure.
The JREF is...
That's it.
That's the holy grail of...
Oh, in terms of skeptical, critical thinking. Yeah. You know, so, okay, I'll come out, I'll do 10 minutes between, you know, Christopher Hitchens and Penn and Teller. Yeah, I'll fill up those 10-minute, you know, transition things, you know, and whatever else you need me to do, I'll carry boxes, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
You know, which then leads to, oh, you know, the guy that you seem to have a decent sense of pacing, and you have a good voice, and you can introduce people. You kind of have this MC thing going on. Mm-hmm. Like, I think you'd be a good MC. Do you want to? You know, our MC is retiring. Do you want to be the MC of this? You know, the whole JREF event.
Right.
Oh, okay, yeah, sure, I'll do that. You know, which then other people see me at that conference. Which, oh, you should come to our other conference over here that's in New York, and this conference that's over here. And it just sort of builds that way, and you kind of, you know, you don't get anything because someone thinks, oh, this guy is talented and good on his own. It's, oh, someone told me, or I saw him do this thing, and he'd be perfect fit for blah. And the podcast just expanded the number of people that would maybe hear a song of mine, or would hear me tell a story, or hear me tell a story about hosting something somewhere, or traveling to someone's house and doing a house concert or whatever it would be. And then it'd be, oh, maybe you can come to my house and do a concert. And then that one guest that's there that has a, you know, a nerd conference or whatever it might be, you know. So it's a random pool balls kind of on the table, but you sort of, you know, you make sure that table is as flat as it can be so that those balls have a chance to collide with each other as much as possible.
Well, one of the things that always blows me away about you, and I brought it up this morning, is the fact that your fans, on every anniversary of your show, they've created very, almost as creative as you, they've roasted you kind of, and they basically create an episode for you.
Yeah.
It's kind of an homage.
Fan cast.
Yeah, fan cast.
Yeah. Carrie P., who's the number one fan. Yeah. That's kind of her moniker.
Yeah.
Yeah, she said, like, would you be okay? No, was it? She didn't even ask. She just did it. The first year was a surprise. We just received this file of, like, or the second year, whatever it was. Yeah. We received this file. Like, we did this fan cast for you because, you know, me and a couple other people wanted to do it, and it's kind of become its own thing. And now she's retired from it. She has a kid now, and other people are taking it up. And it's incredibly humbling, humbling, and really cool that the people that are listening to the show. It's a small audience, but it is a really loyal and very dedicated and interested audience.
So how do you, like, how much of your, let's talk about your production of that. Because I'm finding that good content is not typically things that are just, like, you're very improv.
Right.
But I'm thinking you probably put more than 5 minutes into a show.
Yeah, there's a plan. And there's always a plan, there's always an outline, there's always a sense of, is this working, is it not working? I think ultimately what my real skill is, and this applies to everything that I do, is I'm a really good editor. So that when I'm putting a set list together for the funk band, which is my, you know, playing drums in a funk band is my job. That's my day job. And I create the sets for that organization, for that group. Now, we got to put 15 songs together for an hour, so it's editing. Will this work? You know, how does this go? Segues and blah, blah, blah. When I'm putting a live performance together, I'm going to, okay, two songs and then a story, and then I'm going to do a, you know, a skit or a sketch and then do that, you know. Editing, is this working? You know, if I'm telling a story and I can sort of sense I'm losing the audience, okay, it's, you know, in the moment, there's the editor. So I think the editing thing is what I do really well, and that definitely enters into when I'm planning the show, when I'm recording the show, is this going anywhere? Is it not? Are people getting bored? Would I be bored with this? Is this interesting to me? Definitely a plan. I've gotten to the point now with 300 and whatever, almost 50 shows, that I can whip a show out pretty easily.
Right.
I don't want to do that, though. I don't want to just rest on, oh, I can do this, I can do this. I know I'll fill it up. It's nice to have that as a backup. So if I've had a crazy week and I still need to do a show, because that is the real secret, which we'll get to, I'm sure, in a minute. But if I need to do a show, I know that if pressed, I can go into my archive. I can go into, you know, questions that people have sent me or interesting animals that they've sent me, and I can do 45, 50, 55 minutes. But I still like to try to do something different or try to plan something slightly different. But unfortunately, the thing that will foment, or I think the thing that has fomented or provided me with an audience that's so loyal and so interested, is just doing it. You know, it's a very unglamorous answer to how do you become successful. How do you get more listeners? It's like you put a show out with whatever schedule you've promised, whether it's daily, weekly, monthly, whatever it is, like you do it, and then you do it again, and then you do it again, and you just keep doing it. And it's very, you know, whether you're blogging, whether you're writing music, whether you're building cabinets, you know, like do the thing that you do. I just saw Scott Sigler do a talk today. And it was great. It was three things that I wish I had done at the beginning and three things I wish I hadn't done.
Oh, very cool.
And one of the things amongst his three things I wish I hadn't done was realize that everything that is not writing is not writing. You know, I am a writer, this is Scott saying. I write horror fiction. That's what I do. If I'm tweeting, if I'm blogging, vlogging, guesting on someone else's show, yes, those are important. But I'm not writing. You know, if I'm agreeing to someone else's project or some other thing that someone is doing, I'm not writing. So ultimately, I have to remember that's what I am, is a writer, and I have to create my schedule to let as much writing as possible. They're not only writing, obviously, because you have to get it out there.
Right.
But that's got to be the goal. So for me, it's like I'm a podcaster. I'm a creator of silly podcast content, like, you know, slash musician. So those, you know, those work nicely in concert, because often when I'm putting music together, I use it for the show. So, oh, here's a new tune. Here's a demo. Here's the thing I'm working on. This will take up a few minutes of the show, and it'll be content. But you just got to do it. You just have to write, you know, put the show together, realize they won't all be great, realize some will be better than others, and realize that as the more you do it, the better it'll be. But that's such an no one's going to write a Podcasting for Dummies book that's just, you know, one page that says podcast. You know,
well, that's, people always go, how do I grow my audience? They go, there's a two-word plan. It says, don't quit.
Yeah.
Because I always think, if you stop because I only had 122 downloads, if you hadn't stopped a year and a half ago, you might have 300 now.
Yeah.
And that's one of the key things I want to point out here, as we get into the things you've done here. 7 years.
7 years.
It's not. It wasn't 6 months.
Yeah, 7 years every week. And initially, I literally was doing this for my dad and maybe Slough. You know, I thought, all right, at least Slough's going to tune in. I know Slough's going to tune in for sure. Right. Dad will be about 50% probably. But you know, but at least, and so I'm. That's what I'm talking to. And I'll probably get some reaction. I can call Slough and say, "What did you think of the sketch?" Was, you know, and he'll say, "Yeah, that was great. That was whatever." And that was probably the first almost year. You know, and then we realized, oh, we got 600 downloads this week, you know, or 300 downloads, whatever it was. And the great Evo Terra told me, imagine that somewhere in your town there's a meeting place, whether it's a coffee shop or a little theater or something, and every week you put on a one-hour show and 600 people come. That would be phenomenally successful.
Right.
If you could do that every week, and every week have 600 people come to your talk at some coffee shop or some place in town, that would be unbelievable. I thought, that's exactly what it is. That's how you have to look at it.
Oh, yeah.
And then it became, 1,000 people are listening every week, and then 2,000, and then 5,000. And you keep picturing those people. And don't think, oh, that's not 100,000, or oh, it's not Grammar Girl, or oh, it's not The Skeptics Guide to the Universe, or oh, it's not whatever.
Right.
It's not NPR. Who cares?
I always think, because of my teaching background, a big class is 30 people.
Exactly.
And so just 100 people, it's like, that's three classrooms.
Yeah. I mean, one of the best shows I ever did was a house concert in London, and there was probably 20 people in this house, sitting in a semicircle. I was sitting on a bar stool and played guitar for like 3 hours. Transcendent kind of like what music can be moment, And that, 20 people, 25 people maybe, let alone when you get into the thousands or hundreds, or if it's 50 people, like, who cares? If you have 50 people that are into what you're doing, that's cool. Because you can do that. This invention has allowed us to really connect with people on whatever intimate level that you want. So it's cool, and just think of it that way.
How much of of your day is spent answering emails? Is that stuff that miss? Because you have basically a manager.
Yeah.
Is that basically Donna's title or?
Yeah, she's like the tech guru manager. I answer emails. Every morning there's sort of like that first lap that you take. Is answering emails, or at least saying, hey, thanks for that. Thanks for the link. Thanks for the story. Or great question. I'll talk about that, soon. Or great question. I'll talk about this week. Or nine. Whatever the answer might be.
Yeah.
That's every day. Anywhere from 15 to sometimes it's an hour and a half or whatever it might be.
Right.
Which is fine. And then, the show itself is usually Tuesday, Wednesday. So Tuesday, if I'm doing a sketch, or if there's kind of a demo or something, that's kind of writing on Tuesday, maybe doing some work. And then Wednesday, most of the day, or at least the second half of the day, is kind of like, all right, let's get all our info together. Let's just plot it and edit the thing and see where it's going to be. And then you kind of do it. So, six to 10 hours, depending. If I'm doing, my acoustic version of Dark Side of the Moon, that's, 4 days work, Or
right.
if I'm doing like a jazz concert, jazz Christmas concert, where right. I'm playing all the instruments,
right.
that's like, 3 days. I lock myself upstairs and kind of just work on it, to get
right.
44 minutes of content.
But if it's just your standard, your typical
standard, I would say, probably four to 8 hours, I would say.
For how much? For about
45 to an hour.
That's what I was going to say.
Yeah, it's about 50 usually, pretty
Okay,
pretty
that's about what I usually say. It's usually like four to five. Very, very cool.
Yeah.
All right, so I always like to point that out because good content just doesn't fall off the tree. It takes some research and things like that. Talk about your music sales, because this is one of the things the thing I always think is really interesting is you almost do no selling. You are a great example of using stories to tie into your topic, because your songs a lot of times are
right.
When you did the periodic table, that was genius.
Yeah.
But it was a way to showcase your music as well, but stayed on topic. Now, granted, the topic is always kind of whatever's on your mind,
sure.
but it was still kind of the sciencey thing. But then later, when you came out with, not that that wasn't like. It wasn't your stuff. Did you put that out as an album? You should have.
No, I haven't. Yeah, I have this hour and 20 minutes of music that's just I haven't done anything with. I know, it's crazy.
But I was going to say,
you can download it. You can get it. So this was called The Occasional Songs for the Periodic Table.
Yeah.
It was 119 sort of mini songs, one for each element.
They're
some are
awesome.
5 seconds, some are 2 minutes.
Do you have a favorite?
Oh my gosh.
I'm going to dust off some cobwebs.
Helium. This is Helium.
Okay.
Obviously. Helium, you make my voice sound just like Geddy Lee. That's my favorite. I think that's my favorite. Yeah. But silly, And boy, people connected with it and they loved it. And that's whatever show that is. It's like show 190 or something, where you put all 119 of them in there.
It was like Stephen Wright put the melody almost.
Okay, yeah, I'll take that.
It was very, very cool.
Yeah.
And science tied in.
Right.
So you've created this connection with your audience now through your podcast.
one experiment you did that I thought was really cool, because I got to participate in that one,
right.
Is you gave away your entire album for free.
Yes.
As one big, huge chunk.
Yeah, yeah.
And tell us about what that did to your music sales.
Yeah. When my last album, Trebuchet, came out, we thought, okay, I'd love to give this away somehow. What can we do that would be sort of like the Scott Sigler model, where Scott, as a writer, he went to all his podcast friends and said, I'm going to give you a PDF of my next book, my next novel. Put that PDF into your file. People can download it. They can read my book. If they want it, then it's going to be available that week. They can buy it. He did this and ended up number 7 on the New York Times bestseller list.
Wow.
It's insane.
Right.
First guy to ever do this. Genius. So he went, in essence, between all the people that he knew that had podcasts and all of their combined audiences, 100,000 people downloaded, or no, more than that, like 500,000 people downloaded this PDF. A bunch of them read it, liked it. A bunch of them liked it so much that they bought it. And he ended up number 7 on the best New York Times bestseller list. So I thought, okay, what's my version of that? How do we do that with the album? I thought, oh, maybe I'll do an acoustic version of the record, and we'll have that in the show. Okay, maybe it'll be, alternate takes. I'm trying to think, and then it just got to the point of, screw it. We'll put the album into the feed as one huge MP3, one 70-minute MP3.
Right.
If somebody wants to cut it up into individual songs and somebody wants to download, they're going to do that anyway.
Right.
Let them do it. Go for it. Do whatever you want with this.
Right.
The majority of people are going to listen to it like a show. At the end of it, I'll say, if you like this, it's on iTunes today, or whatever the date was.
Mm-hmm.
I'll send that also to all of my friends that are podcasters as well and say, hey, if you want, put this in your feed. So many did. It was like 14, 15 shows, I think, that did. And I was close to, we kind of tried to cap. There's a lot of crossover in terms of people listen to my show and 3 or 4 of the other shows.
Right.
But we got probably close to about, 80,000 to 100,000 sets of ears that listened to the thing. Sales went through the roof. I mean, Trebuchet outsold all of my previous stuff combined.
Wow.
The other 5 records combined. And it did so well in CD Baby that it actually pulled up catalog stuff, so that the album before, Interrobang, all of a sudden ended up on the funk chart, at CD Baby, which hadn't, that record was 6 years old.
Wow.
But just that tidal wave of people coming through and having heard that thing. It was, I don't know if I'll ever be able to duplicate that again, because people are a little bit more reticent to have, 70 minutes of their show taken up by some other guy's record.
Yeah. You get asked to do Tam London.
Yes.
That was cool.
Yeah.
Because, again, going back to, you did the other thing, which led to the other thing, the other thing.
Which I met Tracy, who was an organizer of Tam, was at Atlanta, and just, hey, do you want to come? You'd be great. We need, because it's a different, we want a different kind of thing, and you do 45 minutes of music. Oh, yeah, sure, great, let's do it.
So your fans hear that, hey, George is going to be on the other side of the pond.
Yeah.
And what happens?
Well, that's actually two different.
Combining stories?
A little combining story,
okay.
Yeah. I did Tam London, that went really well.
Okay.
Another conference of English skeptics got put together called QED.
Okay.
That was Question, Explore, Discover. That was in Manchester. And those people...
Now, how did you get that?
That also was, they realized that they'd seen me at Tam London.
Okay.
They had also, they figured, oh, well, he's got this kind of podcaster voice thing. He'd be a great MC. So that was the very first thing I MC'd was QED.
Okay.
Where they flew me out to Manchester for the weekend, and I got to introduce, Simon Singh and, people whose books I've read. It's unbelievable. John Ronson, the guy that wrote The Men Who Stare at Goats, he wrote the book that the movie's based on.
Oh, cool.
Great writer. Really, really good. So I got to meet them, introduce them. Did those 3 days. Coincidentally, when I released Trebuchet, we had inserted into one of the physical copies
the golden ticket,
which said, congratulations, you've just won the golden ticket. George will come to your house and do a show, no matter where you are. We'll figure it out. If you're into it, he will come to your house and do a show. So, of course, the golden ticket winner lived in Finland. So he calls me and says, I won the golden ticket. I'm in Finland. Is that okay? I was like, that's fine. We'll figure it out. Hey, wait, I'm going to be in Manchester in whatever it was, February,
right.
Which is insane.
Right.
maybe since, you know, Europe is only the size of New Jersey, maybe we can coordinate this. And we did. And then word got out. And so the Oslo skeptics said, hey, if you're going to be in Finland, you should come to Norway and do a show. And then guys in Gothenburg were like, well, if you're going to be in Oslo, you should come do a show in Gothenburg. And then people in Dublin were like, well, wait a minute. If you're going to be in Manchester, you should come to Dublin. We have a skeptics group that gets to... And I ended up doing, whatever, six cities throughout Europe.
So your fans basically booked you a tour.
Exactly. Same exact thing in Australia. You know, I got booked to perform at TAM Australia in Sydney. Mm-hmm. Word got out. Around the show, I said, hey, I'm going to be in Australia. Mm-hmm. And so Adelaide and two cities in New Zealand and I can't think of Brisbane and mm-hmm. three other cities got in touch. And like, if we fly you, you know, we'll put you up. You want to do a show? Yeah, absolutely. You know, so I don't necessarily get directly paid for the performance, but then I get to sell swag. You know, Australians, they bought out everything. It was unbelievable. Like, as soon as I got there, they started buying stuff because they just, it's a different access to it, you know. And
right.
people really appreciate when you show up, especially non-U.S. people, you know, in Europe. They really appreciate when you show up with stuff.
Right.
And they just, they want to support, they want to help, so...
Cool.
It's, yeah, that again, it's all because of the show. It's all because on the program I can say, hey, I'm going to be in Australia. Hey, I'm going to be in Finland. You know, hey, I'm going
to
be...
Direct,
you know,
access to your fans.
Yeah, I'm going to be in... I want to do a West Coast thing, you know. Mm-hmm. The Canadian tour last year, I did Vancouver, Calgary, and Edmonton. You know, one guy in Vancouver wanted me to come do a show for the Vancouver Skeptics. And I said, hey, I'm going to be in Vancouver. So Calgary got in touch and Edmonton got in touch. And I did a three-city, you know, tour of Canada.
Sweet.
It's just great. It's really, really great.
So I don't want to skip anything because I was going to end up with you, your new little venture.
Yes.
Am I missing anything from the TAMs and the, all the
yeah,
other...
Yeah, no, I mean, that's a lot of it, you know, and a lot of it is sort of recursive and just feeds on itself in a very strange way. And you can't point to that one thing. You know, mm-hmm. the one thing I can point to is starting the podcast.
Right.
You know, but even that, I already had three albums under my belt.
Right.
You know, so it was, oh, you know, you like this song that I'm playing at this coffee open mic whatever house
right.
thing? Like, oh, well, I do a podcast now. You should check it out. You know, oh, that song you did about whatever was really funny. Oh, and I do a podcast. Check it out. Oh, yeah, my friend's what's a podcast? Oh, my buddy has a podcast. He's heard of a podcast. You know, like when this first started, it was so new and so different.
Right.
So there isn't a single thing you can really point to, but it's just, it really is like a flood until you step back 7 years later and go, how the hell did I get here?
Yeah.
You know, how did this just happen? You know, where I'm talking to Richard Dawkins or, you know, Adam Savage is texting me, hey, come to my show. You know, one of the Mythbusters is
right.
texting me because I met him, you know, in London and we hung out for a little bit. You know, it's like so surreal, you know, it's so crazy. But I have to reiterate, you just do the work. You do the work, and when you're asked to show up to do something, destroy.
Right.
You know, that's the thing you have to really do and not take things lightly. It really bugs me when I go to conferences like this or I host an MC of something mm-hmm. and someone has an opportunity to speak and they don't do their homework. It's
yeah.
like, oh, you are never going to get asked to do this again. You just blew it. Like, what are you doing?
So your latest venture is?
Well, after a long time, I mean, I prided in the fact that my show was free and I didn't have commercials.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't have a sponsor. I occasionally would say, hey, I put an album out. If you want to support the show, you know, at the end I would have a little thing that would say, if you want to support the show, don't just give me money. Buy something.
Right.
Buy something that I have. Go buy an album. Go buy a book. Go buy a whatever I have available. And you get to support me and you get a thing. Whether it's a 99-cent, you know, download or
right.
a $16 book or a $15 CD or whatever it is.
That's the beauty of that. That's your only plug is maybe 30 seconds long.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's the new thing. So the new thing now, after we did that for 6 years,
right.
we kind of got to a point of like, you know, when I passed 3 million downloads or 2 million downloads,
mm-hmm.
you know, of total whatever
right.
downloads or whatever it was, it was like, okay, I think my audience is undeniable. Like, yeah. We've got a thing, whether or not it's huge or whatever. There is a something that's here where the math can be massaged to our advantage. You know, small percentages can be massaged to our advantage. And that's when I decided to do a sponsorship thing where you could sponsor or be a patron of the show. Mm-hmm. And we have two levels of patronage. You can be a geographer for $3.95 a month, or you can be a geologist for $7.95 a month. So it's $4 or $8, basically.
Right.
The geologists get, you know, some swag. They get discounts. You get all kinds of deals on upcoming stuff and previous things. First pick of, you know, tickets, first pick of new albums, new DVDs, whatever. Geologists, the $8 level, get all that as well. They get a T-shirt. They get a weekly email from me, which is not just a, hey, this is your email, listen to the show, bye. It's like a written, you know, it's a sort of a thing. It's a, you know, a couple hundred words. It's almost like an offshoot of the show on a certain level. And then coupons and access to other stuff and special content. So I'll do an interview or I'll do, hey, here's this horrible old demo that I did from way back. And my goodness, this is just fun and embarrassing to listen to, but check it out. You might be interested to see. This is the very first version of that song, which ended up here or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And I was hesitant. I was hesitant and worried, like, that no one was going to do this or that I would upset people, because I had prided myself on it. It was very short, you know, very short... A very short amount of the show was, hey, if you want, go spend something. If it's okay, like, but you don't have to. But if you want to, you could. Right. I kind of prided on that, and we realistically, you know, were shooting for a 1% return. You know, that's what we wanted from what we knew our weekly / monthly listenership and download ship was. We wanted 1% because we knew Donna and I knew from direct marketing, direct mail, that a 1% return is very successful.
Like, so, that's really, really good.
That's really good, yeah.
So for the person that thinks, if I can just get half of my people...
Yeah, you can't think in terms of, you know, 25%, a quarter, half. Like, don't use
10%.
Fourth grade fractions. You can't. No. You know, the fifth and sixth grade fractions don't work in terms of what an audience will spend money on. And it sucks, and I don't understand why.
Right.
But, you know, so you have to realize whatever your, you know, listenership is, whatever your audience is, if you can get a 1% return on something like this, something which is a direct repeating cost, you're doing okay. And we did it. We instantiated it, and we got our 1%, and then we got our 2%, and then we're approaching our 3%. And it's really cool, and it's a real testament to my listeners. And
the beauty of it, again, is you don't... It's not where after every segment, it's sign up today, segment, sign up today. I think you do it once in the middle, most of the day, yeah.
Pretty much, it always changes. It's somewhere in the meat of the show.
Yeah.
The and I'm giving away a little secret here, but the promo actually, I have, it's the same promo. And now I have one from the guys from SGU did one for me as well.
Yeah.
It's the same commercial, but there's 5 versions of it. So you never know which version you're going to get, and they, like, each one has a different punchline and different things in the middle. So if you do listen to it each time, it does change. Yeah, you don't probably even realize. Yeah, there's 4 versions of it. The SGU sent me their little promo, which is about a minute long, saying, hey, subscribe. There's 3 versions of that one. So it's if you want to skip it, but you actually can. It's like, wait a minute, oh, I thought the punchline was different. You know, it's one of those, if you're paying attention,
so
you
it's
do
not
get rewarded.
The same old, same
it's
old.
Not the same 30-second bit, you know.
That's cool. That's
so it's just a little trick, a little silly thing you can kind of do.
But it shows that, again, even with a commercial.
Right, like, I'm sorry, this is a commercial, but at least it's, you don't know.
At least it's entertaining.
Yeah, hopefully.
Very, very cool.
Yeah.
So, okay, great. Now, any flack from your audience?
No.
Anybody was like,
no, zero.
You dirty,
it's amazing.
Sellout,
nothing.
Nasty.
It's amazing. The absolute opposite of, finally, I can't tell you how many emails I got of, finally, like, thanks for letting me support the show. Thanks for letting me give you money. Like, I can't tell you what that does to me as a content person. Of, and, you know, I understand, because, you know, I'm a fan of people, and it's like, what, you know, I want to support this artist. What can I do, or whatever it is, and so many emails of, like, good for you. It was about time.
Yeah,
about time. You know, or people that were telling me to do it 5 years ago. Yeah, it's the right amounts. You know, small increments repeated a lot really do well. So if it's $4 a month, every month, or $4 a week, you know, $4 a month, you know, every month from a lot of people, that adds up really quick. And, you know, it's not a fortune, but for an independent musician, you know, it's a game-changing amount. It's always that, you know, you always say, if I had two more gigs a month, like two more good gigs a month, boy, things would be different. Well, I got my two more good gigs a month.
Very cool.
It's just you can relax. I can relax.
The one thing I forgot to mention, we talked a little bit about it before we hit record. You put out, I don't know when, but you're like a Best of Geo CD. How did that go? Because I've known a couple of guys who have tried that.
Yeah, that was a third party or a second party, I guess that would be, got in touch with me and said, if, you know, we have this sort of, these podcast collections, can we do a best of, would you be interested? I said, sure. So I gave them, you know, I edited and cut together all stuff and gave it to them, and they said, yeah, we'll give you whatever it was, half, I think, 60% of that stuff. Yeah, it didn't do anything.
Okay.
It didn't do anything. You know, a couple little sales here and there, but that for some reason didn't fly. There was no investment on my part, so
there you go. You know,
they were burning them as they were ordered, so there was no real investment on their part either. So maybe a handful up front.
But the cool thing is that shows the ability of, like, throw it on the wall, see what happens.
Yeah. It's like, yeah, sure, okay. Like, is this, how much is it going to cost me? Like, nothing? Oh, well, yeah, great, okay.
Cool.
Does it dilute my brand? No? Okay, yeah, fine.
Right.
You know, do you get to decide what's on it? No, I get to decide? Okay, yeah, great. You know, so all those factors enter into it, and you go, all right, let's try. And we tried, and it didn't work. You know, it didn't work, but whatever.
Right.
It's fine. It's fine.
Two more questions, and we'll actually get some sleep eventually. The traditional, of course, for new people starting out. Yeah. Any lessons looking back now that you go, I wish if I could do that, do that one again, or whatever, or anything.
It's odd. On one level, I wish I wasn't quite as personal in my content as I was at moments, because it is embarrassing how personal I got. However, I think I endeared myself with my audience, and on some level, like, I can't listen to a big swath of about 6 months of my show.
Yeah,
because it is very, very personal. It's very, you know, guy lost in the middle of an emotional crisis.
Right,
which I can't believe that is out there and that exists, you know, in the ether.
It's intimate, though.
It is very intimate.
That's the whole thing.
Yeah.
And if you know, somebody pulls down their pants in front of you, you're kind of like, ooh, I feel awkward, but this guy must really trust me because he's pulling down his pants.
And so that, you know, it's a really double-edged, you know, blessed sword that I think on some level some people left, but those but those that stayed, boy, they were in.
Yeah.
And it was like, you know, it was like watching a friend, you know,
through recovery
Sort of and destroy themselves and then save themselves, and you know, sort of a trial by fire or a friendship by fire or whatever. But on the far end of it, like, those people are they're loyal.
It's,
oh my God, they're loyal. Because it's like, you know, now they want to know, are you okay? What's going on with your life? You know, what's this mean? You know, so I don't know if I would repeat that, you know. And I've purposefully backed off on some of the more intimate and personal sort of details of my existence.
Yeah.
But at the time, it was this new thing. It was exciting, and this thing was happening to me, and here was this great. On the other hand also, or on the third hand, if we can have a little, you know, third beast or whatever, a little Simpsons animal, it got me through it.
Yeah.
It was this, you know, especially at the end, you know, when things fell apart, the therapy of having to get in front of a mic and talk for 45 minutes a week to people that knew the story, or I assume knew the story. Boy, I don't know what I would have done without that. I don't know. And I never stopped the show. That was everything too. Like, you know, never stop doing it. So that's one thing. Otherwise, I never started out thinking, if I do this for 7 years, you know, I'll have visited 5 continents, blah, blah, blah. I think I have a skill set to do this, and I think Slough will like it. Yeah, this will be fun. Let me see if I can do 50 of these.
I want to make my friend laugh.
Yeah, I want to make my friend laugh. I want to tell my friend some stories, or I want to, you know, can I do this? I think I could do this. Let me see what this is like. Let me do this for a year. Oh, God, a year? 6 months? Yeah, a year. Let's try a year. All right, let's try a year. At Nexus last year, which is the Northeast Conference on Science and Skepticism, we did a workshop on podcasting. And we, being Steve Novella and the Skeptic's Guide to the Universe, one of the all-time most successful science podcasts, he and I did, you know, how do you do this?
Right.
And it was really fun to come at it from opposite sides, because Steve, being a neurosurgeon, you know, brain doctor, has what is commonly called a budget. and can buy stuff, you know, to his credit. And so his gear is top-notch. He talks about his microphones and all this. And, you know, there was this one moment where we wanted to show how do you do, you know, call-in guests or guests on your program. So he talked about, he used to do it on Skype, and then he talked about the hardware that he had and the software that he had, and he showed some pictures, you know, of like, this is the thing, and you key in here, and you use this virtual board and all this stuff. And they said, you can do that, or the way George does it. And then we showed a picture, and I literally have a phone rubber banded, you know, with a rubber band to my Samson USB microphone. When my mom calls the show, it's a phone on speakerphone, in essence, duct taped to the microphone. And I talk sort of behind it, you know. So it's a 3 cent, you know, solution. And it sounds great. You know, I EQ'd it, so it sounds okay, and it sounds fine, and you would never know that it's literally a rubber-banded phone.
I never would have guessed
that. Yeah, it's, you know, so it's like, both are totally valid, you know, as long as it sounds good, as long as you make it sound fine. So, like, you don't need gear, you don't need, you know, high-end stuff. You need it to be as good as it can be, as good as you can swing it, and then your ears have to make it be as good as it can be. So, yeah, get a pop filter, something stupid. Use a sock if you have to. Things like that, that just sort of, don't be intimidated by, you know, gear and mixing boards and all kinds of advice that you might get in terms of sound, because ultimately it is content. It is, are you telling an interesting story? Is your content interesting? It's a cliche now, like, it's got to be content. Content is what's most important.
There you go. And people can find you at?
Yes, geologicpodcast.com, or you can just Google my name, H-R-A-B. It's unique enough that the first 48,000 hits are me, so.
And you are on Stitcher as well.
Oh, I am, yeah, yes.
Because that's how I listen.
Yes, I'm on Stitcher.
Cool.
Very, very cool.
I want to thank you so much for tuning in. I want to thank everybody who's been sending in the Because of My Podcast stories. Keep them coming in. I love the fact that I looked in my folder today. I have three, and I thought, wow, this is cool. So keep them coming in. I will get them on there, and I am eventually, slowly, I should say, adding them to schoolofpodcasting.fm. That's our streaming version of all my shows here at the School of Podcasting. So you can click there and just say, listen, and it'll go on and on and on and on. That's a lot of Dave for that. But I want to thank George Robb for taking the time out of his busy day out at New Media Expo to be interviewed. And again, you can find him at geologicpodcast.com and buy his music. I love his albums and stuff. He's a guy, again, think about what we learned with George. We learned that A, good content takes time to produce. B, when you have an opportunity, you have to be ready to take advantage of it. And every episode is an opportunity for you to connect with people, to spread your message, to get a better understanding of your customer, to build your business, to build your brand. That's an opportunity. And don't just mail it in. Put some thought into it. And We learned that. We learned that in his case, right, he's been doing this for 7 years. And it led to opportunity to opportunity to opportunity. And in each case, he rocked and rolled, for lack of a better phrase. We learned that, you know, not everything worked. Right? He had the one CD that where somebody did like a best of, and it didn't work. So I'm sitting here thinking, did I cut that out? I don't know. We'll find out. But thank you to George. And thank you to you for listening to this podcast, and I hope to see you on the inside. Go out, start living a life worth podcasting, and thank you so much. Class is dismissed. Take care. God bless.